And welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. Two ways for you to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513. If you can't get to a phone, hit us up on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. Well, we look at the clock, Paul. Free agency has officially started. Noon today. Noon Eastern, to be more specific, for those of you outside
the East Coast. Wait, just a second.
Yes, oh, you already got the...
Yeah? How many years? How much?
Yes, the Academy Award is in the mail now.
Bonus? Come on, man. Are you kidding me?
Those conversations...
No. Get back to me when you want to be real and reasonable. Go ahead, Lance.
Well, those conversations will be taking place, I can guarantee you, across the NFL landscape. But it is safe to speak to potential free agents, and that's what everybody is doing as we speak. You can also try to lock up your own players before March 9th comes around and so forth. And we're going to get to plenty on the free agency front, but today's program is also dedicated to recapping what transpired at the NFL Combine in Indianapolis. So we're going to cover both topics here simultaneously. And to provide more insight, we now bring in Luke Easterling, managing editor, DraftWire at USA Today SMG, who obviously has put together a number of mock drafts, has analyzed all the prospects, and he's kind enough to give us a few minutes here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Luke, Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino on Giants.com. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Hey, appreciate you guys having me. Things are fantastic. It's like 78 degrees and breezy down here in Florida. So
thanks.
Well, thank you for rubbing it in. Unfortunately, we can't relate to that here a little bit up north.
Not today, no.
Spring showed up, and then winter decided to come back. But, Luke, let's get to business, and that's with respect to the Combine. I know you've been following a lot of these prospects for some time, but what was your biggest takeaway from the Combine? Or let me be more specific. What player perhaps rose up the rankings based on what you saw at the Combine that you weren't necessarily sold on prior to doing your homework and so forth?
I think that, and I tweeted this out after watching Monday's workout, the last group to go was the defensive backs, and that was the group that I was most looking forward to, because on paper it looked like one of the best classes we've seen in a long time. And after those workouts wrapped up, this is my 17th draft. I've never seen a defensive backs class like this, both at corner and safety. The depth, the athleticism, the versatility, if you need small nickel guys, if you need big, physical guys with long arms at the line of scrimmage to match up against those big physical wide receivers that the league is churning out now, there's really something for everybody in this class. And then you throw in, wild card type guys like Jabril Peppers and Buda Baker from Washington, guys that can line up just about anywhere. And it's just such a rare class. The one player that I think surprised everybody the most was the same guy that did it at the Senior Bowl. Obi Melifonwu, the safety out of UConn, he's listed at 6'4", 220 during the season. And, been doing this long enough to know that sometimes those school websites like to inflate those numbers a little bit. So we expected him to come in closer to like 6'2 and maybe 205 pounds. And he was a legit 6'4 and almost 220. And then he comes to the combine at 6'4", 224 and runs a 4.4 flat 40, 43-inch vertical leap, almost 12 feet in the broad jump. His heels landed on the last piece of tape they had. So, he's just a ridiculous athlete. I saw some teams talking to him, maybe moving him to corner at 6'4", 225 pounds. That's just ridiculous. I think him, Hassan Reddick, the linebacker out of Temple, another guy had a very strong Senior Bowl week, can line up just about anywhere. And running 4.52 in the at 230 pounds, just ridiculous. The tight end class, we had 10 tight ends run sub 4.7 40-yard dashes. That's just ridiculous. So very deep classes at tight end in the defensive backfield. A lot of edge rushers as well. The edge rush class didn't perform as well in the combine as I expected them to, but a lot of good film on those guys. So honestly, it's really one of the deeper drafts I've seen in a while. Not as many first-round type guys, but that day two range, there's going to be a lot of second and third round picks that are still on the board once we get into the fourth and fifth round.
Now, for fans who want to check out what you think about the Giants, I know that at draftwire.usatoday.com, you have done now a full seven-round mock draft for every NFL team, including the Giants. You have David Njoku, the tight end for Miami, who obviously had a very good combine, and everybody really seems to think he's shooting up on the board. You have him going to the Giants with their first pick. Now, I also think it's a good chance he's gone before 23, but in your mind, if you were to say these three or four core guys, would be there at 23 realistically and would also fit Giants' needs. I'll start you with the Njoku since you've already picked him. Who would be the other three guys, let's say, who you think they might have an opportunity to pick at their spot?
I think if you're looking particularly at the Giants' needs, I think that's going to be a really interesting range if they want to find a true left tackle to improve that spot. I know they spent a top 10 pick on Ereck Flowers. I don't know if he's going to be able to stay at left tackle. This draft, the tackle class isn't great, but that just means that there's really not anybody I'd take in the top 10, maybe 15. But in that 20 to 30 range, I think there's going to be quite a few teams looking for a tackle, and you've got guys like Cam Robinson from Alabama, Ryan Ramczyk from Wisconsin, Garrett Bowles from Utah, who had a really fantastic combine. Any of those guys, if they want to take a tackle, especially if one hasn't come off the board yet, could make sense to them there if they want to try to take the best of a class that's really not that deep. And then I know that the Giants still tend to spend high picks on the linebacking core, but I really think there's some interesting guys that could be available in that range. Raekwon McMillan from Ohio State is a guy I'm real high on. Mm-hmm. Most people see him as a day two guy. I think he's worthy of a late first-round pick, and I think he showed that with his combine workout, ran in the low 4.6s at 240 pounds. Just a great leader, that type of linebacker that I think the rest of his defense takes on his identity, and that type of, you know, heart of the defense type guy is very valuable at the next level. Jarrett Davis, who's a guy that we didn't get to see work out at the combine because he's still recovering from an ankle injury, but another athletic, you know, really physical guy who, again, just a fantastic leader in the locker room. The linebacker's another place they could look. And then again, the edge rushing class, if you want another pass rusher to team up with Jason Pierre-Paul, sure, in the meantime and maybe eventually replace him, I mean, there's probably 10 guys I could rattle off. The one guy that, yeah, I think is most interesting is Derek Rivers from Youngstown State. Had a fantastic workout, great size, great athleticism, and highly productive. Over 50 tackles for loss over his 4 years.
I'm just going to go back to Njoku for just a second because it seemed to me, Luke, that there were a lot of folks at the Combine in Indy who were saying that his potential and his incredible athleticism, and even though he's a little less developed as O.J. Howard is, there's a good chance that some pro teams are going to grade him a lot higher than Howard and that he would be gone maybe in the top 15 and Howard could drop to the Giants. How likely do you think that is?
You know, the draft is so specific to every team's needs that nothing, and again, I've learned not to ever be surprised by just about anything that happens in the draft,
yeah,
but I think if a team is willing to gamble on the long-term upside of Njoku and what he can develop into, I wouldn't be surprised to see someone value that over Howard, who I think anybody would consider a more complete prospect, both as a receiver,
yes,
and honestly as a blocker. I think that's really what separates Howard from the rest of this group, is that, yes, he's 6'6 and 250 and ran as fast a 40 as Dalvin Cook and Leonard Fournette did this weekend, but he's also a fantastic blocker, which you have to be in that Alabama offense. Again, we talk a lot about the fact that that offense didn't really feature him as a receiver as much as we're used to seeing from really athletic pass-catching tight ends like that. But what it did do was develop him into a fantastic blocker,
yeah,
that I think is really going to set him apart and make him a day-one, three-down player that you don't just see him splitting out wide like a Jimmy Graham and running routes all the time. He's going to be able to give you something in the run game, too. So it just depends on what a team needs. If they're willing to bank on the long game with Njoku, it wouldn't surprise me to see him go first. If Howard's still available in the 20s, man, that's going to be a heck of a steal.
Yeah.
Talking with Luke Easterling, managing editor of DraftWire at USA Today, SMG. And, Luke, I'm glad you brought up the blocking aspect of O.J. Howard because, you know, that's an area of the tight end position where the Giants clearly want to improve. They want to have that two-way tight end. So, as you mentioned, Howard would be a steal if he's there at 23. Let's go under the assumption he's not there. Who else jumps out to you as a two-way tight end where maybe more so their blocking is attractive than necessarily their route running as a receiver, because there is a great deal of depth at this position?
The one guy that stands out who I think was one of the more impressive tight ends in that group this past weekend is George Kittle from Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy that,
yeah,
I didn't really have him rated as highly as a pure pass catcher and that type of weapon. But, I mean, you know, in that Iowa offense, they're going to line up and play power football and run the ball right down your throat.
Indeed.
And they have to have that type of tight end on the edge who can just impose his will on those edge defenders and set the edge and kick guys out if they want to run between him and the tackle. So that was really what I was most impressed with at his game. And then he runs out, it goes out and runs in the 4.5s, 4.6s, and really has great hands that you can rely on as a receiver. So he's going to be going much higher in my rankings than I had him because he proved that he's not just a fantastic blocker, but that he can give you something in a passing game as well.
Possibly third round, Luke?
I wouldn't be surprised, especially that's where you're going to see those comp picks, the compensatory picks, come in handy because you're going to have teams on the back end of the third round, those last few picks before the fourth round starts, where if you have an extra pick, you really want to try to grab a guy like that before teams have an opportunity overnight to reset the board again and see who's still there. You want to be able to have that extra pick in your back pocket to say, man, we really want to make sure this guy doesn't get anywhere else tomorrow when everybody has a chance to come back to the board. So guys like that, Jake Butt from Michigan is another tight end
yeah.
that could go in that range because
yep.
I think he's a first-round talent, but you know, coming off the ACL injury, it's going to be a huge question mark. So he could be a huge steal for somebody if he's back to 100%.
I got a two-part question for you with the running backs. Mixed reactions that I got in Indy about the two stud running backs, Fournette and Cook. What do you see happening with those two guys? And then the other thing is, the Giants, we seem to believe, at least a lot of us around here, seem to think that they're going to go for a power back, which you should be able to get in maybe the third or fourth round. I'm a big Samaje Perine guy from Oklahoma. Some people are not, and I understand that. What are your thoughts about those two things?
Yeah, I think that what we saw from Fournette and Cook was about what we expected. I think Cook's workout was a little underwhelming. Thought he'd run into the 4.4s and really didn't take advantage of the fact that Fournette came in a little bigger than we expected, didn't run in the 4.4s like we expected him to do. But I think Dalvin Cook's biggest issue is going to be his medical history. He's had three shoulder surgeries already. Didn't seem to impact him on the field as far as his durability and being able to play in every game for Florida State. But I'm interested to see how certain team doctors viewed that at the combine and those medical evaluations. You know, durability is going to be a question for Leonard Fournette as well. He struggled with that ankle injury through this past season and had a heavy, heavy workload over the 3 years he spent at LSU. So those two guys, I think, are still the top two running backs in this draft. But Christian McCaffrey's workout really put him right there in that mix. I think now instead of having a big two, I think we really have a big three. I think all three of those guys are surefire first-round picks. I wouldn't be surprised to see McCaffrey sneak into the top 15 to a team like Indianapolis or even Philadelphia. But the power back question, I love Perine. I think he really got overshadowed by the fact that Joe Mixon was the more splashy, explosive player and got the big runs. But Perine really is the one that opened that up for him. You know, he's the guy that churned out the tough yardage and really wore those opposing defenses down and opened things up for the big plays for Mixon. I think he proved at the combine he's more athletic than his size may, suggest he will be. Another Big 12 guy that could fit that role is Deontay Foreman from Texas, who we were kind of disappointed. They found a stress fracture in his foot at the combine, so he wasn't able to run. But he was listed at 249 throughout the season, came in at 235 at the combine, so I'm interested. Hopefully he's going to be able to run at his pro day, and we'll see how athletic he is at that lower weight. But those are two power guys that could be in that mid-round range that I think the Giants find a real good value in.
You know what? You're right. The Foreman thing was disappointing to find out about foot problems. And I got to tell you something. The Giants knew when they drafted Ahmad Bradshaw some years ago that he had foot problems at Marshall. He had been telling us he had them all through college and that he was going to have to manage them through the NFL. And look, he had a terrific career. Ahmad Bradshaw did some very good things for the Giants, including help them win a Super Bowl. But I got to tell you, it was very disheartening to see a guy who had so much potential, who because he couldn't practice during the week, many a times he just went out there in uniforms on Sundays and played the game, he never was able to really be maybe what he could have been. And I wonder how many teams are going to think about that, even if he has a good pro day, and say, you know what, foot problems, running back, don't want to deal with it.
Yeah, I think that you've seen the league be very unforgiving towards the running back position lately when it comes to their durability. And when you have a guy that's coming into the league already with some questions, it's just going to be difficult because nobody takes a bigger pounding at the skill positions on either side of the ball than those running backs do on a snap-by-snap basis. And I think that's why you're continuing to see more and more teams go back to the committee approach in the backfield because it just keeps everybody fresh. It elongates those careers, and it also gives you some strategic versatility with the things you can do to kind of move guys around and keep opposing defenses guessing. So I do think it's disappointing to see guys come into the league with those injury issues, and you just wish, as an evaluator, I want every player I scout to succeed. So It is kind of disappointing when you see the flashes from guys and you know how talented they could be. It's disappointing to see them held back by those medical issues.
Well, Luke, speaking of strategy and evaluating injuries for some of the young prospects, you know better than anybody else, with free agency starting today, the free agency period normally impacts ultimately what teams decide to do in the draft. So based on what you saw at the combine, what is the one position where you're not sold on the depth, and if you're a team out there and you want to shore up this position, you have to lean more towards free agency than waiting for what's going to be left over in the draft?
I think we talked about it earlier. It's offensive tackle. I just feel like this draft has no true, you know, blue chip day one starter at left tackle that you can spend a top 15 or 20 pick on. And not only that, I feel like after the first three or four guys on that list, you're really taking some big chances and trying to bank on athleticism and physical traits over really a refined prospect that can come in and make an immediate impact. So I think if you're, especially at a position that's so important, if you're, you know, in the Giants' perspective, if you're trying to protect a franchise quarterback like Eli Manning for the, you know, the home stretch last few seasons maybe of his career, you aren't going to be able to invest in this left tackle class, somebody that's going to really be that type of player until two or three years down the road when maybe we're talking about, you know, Manning being in the twilight of his career. So I think if a team like the Giants or any team has a veteran quarterback but needs that tackle, either at left or right tackle, this draft is going to be a tough place to find it, and I think that could drive the free agent market financially up for those guys that are going to be out there available.
Are there a few offensive linemen, because, you know, this is a direction the Giants have gone in the past, even with free agency, that you said, okay, maybe they're not ready to play tackle immediately day one, but there's enough versatility there, Luke, that they could go back and forth between guard and tackle and maybe serve as a backup before they're ready to start at multiple positions? Because clearly, as you know, versatility on the offensive line is something that is attractive but rare. Is there anyone that jumps out to you that maybe could at least fit that bill in the early stages of their career?
Yeah, I'm a sucker for a versatile offensive lineman. I love guys that can either play center or guard or tackle. You have those rare guys that can maybe play all three. There's three guys in this draft that come to mind in the first maybe three or four rounds. One guy that I think could play all three positions is Forrest Lamp from Western Kentucky. You know, shorter arms and not as big as you'd want a tackle to be, but he played left tackle his whole career at Western Kentucky, played really well against teams like Alabama and showed that he can shut down top competition. So I think he's probably better at guard. They worked him at center a little bit at the Senior Bowl, I believe, and I think he could stay at tackle. But I think he's a guy that can really do anything you want, and that's the kind of young guy you like to have who can plug into any position if you have an injury and then develop into a quality starter. The other two guys that I really, really like that can play either guard or tackle, Taylor Moten from Western Michigan, Temple, Deion Dawkins, both guys that I think, particularly as a right tackle or right guard, could be a 10-year starter in the league, and I think you can get those guys in the second or third round.
You know, Luke, I want to ask you about the quarterbacks for just a second, because so many people are saying, well, Eli's window's about to close, the Giants better get a young gun in here who they can groom when Eli finally decides to pack it in. Now, you and I both know there are a few quarterbacks up at the top of this food chain, but then there's a big drop to the rest of them. If I were to say to you, the Giants weren't going to go high on a pick first or second day, but in the third day, they might take a shot on a quarterback who just might be somebody who's got a future, maybe even could be on the practice squad for a season, and then maybe develop into something down the road. And if I said to you that Davis Webb might be that guy, what would you say back to me?
Honestly, I like the fit. I think where I have him graded, that would make a lot of sense. I don't think there's any chance Davis Webb is still on the board that late.
Okay.
We even heard, I think it was Albert Breer of Monday Morning Quarterback, said that he could be in the first round conversation, which I think is silly.
Wow!
But I've seen sillier things. So when I hear stuff like that from guys like that I know have, you know, pretty good sources and are plugged into the league, I start to raise my eyebrow and be like, man, are we really going to see Davis Webb go in the first 40 or 50 picks? Because in my opinion, I really wouldn't mess with a guy like that until the fourth round. Again, has physical tools, has some production. Only a 1 year starter though, and I think he's more of a long shot. I think he's a guy who does need to be a backup for a few years, and I wouldn't spend a day one or day two pick on that guy. But I think that, again, that this quarterback league, it's so starved for those franchise quarterbacks that I think you're going to continue to see teams try to take a chance on those guys earlier, a round or two earlier than they think they should, just because, you know, you want to try to find your Dak Prescott before the fourth round if you think that you have that kind of guy. So we saw that guy go in the fourth round last year. Now teams are going to try to take him in the second or third.
Yeah, the Giants don't have a sense of urgency with that. All right, so throw out a name or two who you think could be a fifth, sixth, or seventh round pick for the Giants who might be worth the stab at that spot.
I think the one guy that I'm really interested to see, and I really hope he develops into a more refined passer, because I feel like he has the intangibles, the leadership ability, the overall athleticism, and he's probably the smartest quarterback in the entire draft, and it's Josh Dobbs from Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's a legitimate, like, rocket scientist student. I mean, he studied, I think, aerospace engineering at Tennessee. He's a literal genius. And, you know, he's a 6'4", 220, very athletic guy, has a strong arm. Mechanics are really all over the place, very inconsistent with his accuracy. So I'd love to see him go to a team like the Giants where he can sit. There's going to be no pressure for a few seasons. He can develop and get used to the speed of the league while he's refining those mechanics and those finer points of the position. I'd love to see him end up in a place like that in that, you know, fifth to seventh round range and allow him to develop into somebody who could be a starter later on.
Talking about Luke Easterling, managing editor, DraftWire at USA Today, SMG. Luke, last one for me, since you just alluded to the fact that you'd be surprised if some of these quarterbacks go in the first round based on what you've seen. And, you know, maybe this quarterback class is not filled with as many names as what we've seen in previous years. Normally there is, or at least there tends to be, a run on quarterback sometimes in the first round. What do you see to be the tone of the first round this year, at least based on, I know free agency hasn't started, but based on what you've seen at the combine, what is going to be the heavy position to keep close tabs on in the first round where there's a lot of these guys at one spot that just continue to go like wildfire in round one?
Yeah, I think that the top four quarterbacks, Deshaun Watson from Clemson, Mitch Trubisky from North Carolina, Deshaun Kizer from Notre Dame, and Pat Mahomes from Texas Tech, I think those guys could all come off the board in the top 25 picks maybe. I don't have them all evaluated that highly, but that's going to be an interesting run because then you're going to see the depth of the pass rusher class, the DB class, really pushed to the back end of the first round, and that's where I think you could see a ton of edge rushers, a ton of corners and safeties start to come off the board and really eat up a lot of that depth before we get into day two. And whoever's left on the board at day two, you could see some teams, much like the Giants moved up to get Landon Collins with the first pick of the second round a few years ago, you could see teams jumping up to get some of that depth that drops to the next round. And I think it'll be driven by the fact that those quarterbacks are going to go much higher than they probably should.
Well, Luke, we greatly appreciate the insight and the time. Enjoy the 78-degree weather, and if you could send it our way, we'd greatly appreciate it.
I most certainly will. I'll see how I can make that happen.
Appreciate it, Luke. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Have a great day.
You as well. Luke Easterling, managing editor, DraftWire at USA Today, SMG, providing his take on what transpired at the combine.
I have to say, in looking at his site, and we often joke about it all the time, but obviously he understands the situation. Free agency is opening up now today with the discussion period. So much will change going into the draft. Yes, it is good to talk about. He's got the full seven rounds for every team up on his site. It's fun to project. It's fun to have conversation. You can't take it seriously. I think he understands that. I think he knows that. But nonetheless, the research and the knowledge about the players, we have had a plethora of guests over the course of the last 2 weeks on this show that have brought so much to the table. And I fans, I just want to tell you, I mean, I've enjoyed it as much as I hope you have. It's been really cool.
Absolutely. I mean, listen, there's so many prospects that it's impossible to keep close tabs on every single one of them, especially at all these positions.
It takes me so much time, energy, and effort to even go through the film work that I do on about 150. That's all I do every year. I only do about 150. And I know what that's like. I don't have a life between the end of college basketball season and the NFL draft. I mean, there's nothing. It's like it's just film.
Are we sure it's only just during that time period?
Thank you.
I think you're being a little bit modest.
I set myself up.
You did set yourself up for that one. That was a fastball right down the middle.
Go ahead.
Thank you. I will take the base hit and up my average.
Phone calls.
Oh, you want to transition to the phone lines?
Let's
sure?
do that.
We can continue to analyze your life on this
I
program
as well.
I don't
think we need to do that
I'd be more than happy to spend a segment on that.
No, it wouldn't take much time.
939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter as well. All right, let's open up the phone lines. Brian is in New Hampshire. He gets us going on Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Brian, what's happening?
Not too much, guys. How you doing?
Hi.
Doing well, Brian. How's things with you?
Doing well. I'm going to leave Paul alone. I think he does some tremendous work. You know, definitely appreciated the combine shows. They were all awesome.
Thank you.
I'm sure there was a lot that went into it. Yeah, so thanks, guys, for doing all that. I just had a couple quick questions. As far as the tight end position, I'd be ecstatic if Njoku or Howard falls, but I can't really see that being a realistic possibility.
I don't think so either.
And there was a guy that I read about. Sorry, go ahead.
I don't think so either, to be honest with you. I think they're both gone by 23.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I just think they're too gifted physically. But there was a guy that I read about the other day from Virginia Tech. He's like 6'6". He looks more like a receiver, but that was a guy that had been mentioned as being of interest for the Giants. Do you guys know who I'm talking about?
Right now, I do not, but I'm going to see if I can refresh myself with a quick check here online. And if I can do that, maybe the name will ring a bell and something will come to me. Because I've just done some preliminary stuff. And, of course, at the Combine, a lot of talking to a lot of people about a lot of these guys. And so, do you see him, Lance?
No, I do not see him.
Virginia Tech prospect, a tight end.
Doing my search as
well. Oh, Bucky Hodges. Yes. This is why sometimes
it
blacks out. You just got to get the refresher. You know, 6'6", 257. He ran a 4.57 or 4.57.
He had a good Combine.
You know, here's the thing. I think, to me, he's probably more of a third rounder. You were talking about him as possibly a first?
No, just as another option later in the draft.
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, the two guys, when I got back from Indianapolis, the two guys that I had in my mind that I penciled in were Kittle and Butt. As guys who would be, if you want to draft in that second day to, avenue or vicinity, I think Butt out of Michigan, Kittle out of Iowa, those are the two guys. When I came back from Indianapolis after what I called and what I learned and what people I talked to, I said to myself, if the Giants had to wait and to get a blocking tight end in that vicinity, those would be the kind of guys I'd be thinking about.
Here's the one thing, though, to note about Bucky Hodges, who I think is an intriguing prospect because of his pure size. I mean, the guy's 6'7". But remember, one of the things that, and I'm not making a comparison to Larry Dinell, I'm just using Larry Dinell as an example. So Giants fans, don't go crazy with this. But what was one of the issues, Paul, that Ben McAdoo and the coaching staff would say with respect to Larry Dinell? Because of his height.
He gets too high,
correct.
Can't get his shoulders down.
And therefore that impacted his blocking. So that's the one thing that I want to throw out there, Brian, with respect to Bucky Hodges. Great size, but what they need to consider is it's 6'7". Can he get down with the pads and be in a position where he can be an effective blocker? Because Larry Dinell was 6'6".
Well, the draft scout I have lists Hodges at 6'6". Also, Butt at 6'5", and Kittle at 6'4". It's all about leverage.
Yeah.
When you're an in-line blocking tight end, it's about leverage, pad level, where you're going to get that punch, that pop, and that push. And, you know, the taller you are, the tougher it is to do. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, am I crazy to think that Jarrell Adams could develop into the blocking tight end?
He shows a desire to do it. He's certainly got the frame. Now, he's also about 6'7". He's a big guy.
Yep.
He's got to learn his technique better, and he's got to get stronger and show more power. I think he can be somewhat of a blocker in the NFL. I don't think he can necessarily be a top-line blocking tight end, but I think he can do some of it. I'd love to see, to be honest with you, I'd love to see Jarrell Adams as part of a two tight end set, where he is the second guy and there's a premier guy on the other side. That would be better for me. Again, we don't know what Will Johnson's story is. I'd like to believe he's going to be healthy this year, because I still think that was probably the most devastating injury the Giants suffered last year, Shane Vereen being the other one.
Well, Adams flashed as a receiver last season, Brian. So, I mean, I think if there's anything for him to show improvement upon as he enters year two, it's definitely blocking. The one promising thing, though, I'll add about Adams is, since his background in college was a lot of special teams, he has the desire, which you alluded to, where he doesn't mind taking on contact and that physicality, because you need to have to want to do that if you're a special teams player. It's just a matter of, can he do it consistently at the line of scrimmage? That's the big question mark.
Yeah, definitely. Why do you guys think he didn't get more opportunity last year? I mean, he looked fast when he had the ball in his hands. I know a lot of rookies had a handful of catches, but I thought he looked pretty good.
Yeah, but you know what? When they talk about a rookie being raw, they're talking about being able to consistently be counted on to do the right thing time and time and time again. And for a lot of rookies, especially if you're not a first, second, or third round draft pick, if you're picked in that second half of the draft, there's a reason why you fell that far. You know, you're not a blue chipper. You're not a plug-and-play player. Jarrell Adams was not a plug-and-play player. He's a guy who was going to require some hard work, elbow grease, and polish. The Giants hope that they will see some development of him in this season and continuing forward. But, no, I think Jarrell Adams probably gave them about as much as they could expect in year number one.
I would agree.
Yeah, I guess I just wish that he would have gotten a shot a little bit earlier, because it seemed like it was pretty evident from early goings in the season that the cupboard was a little bare with Will Tye and Larry Donnell.
Well, I think they also hoped that they also had hoped the Giants, I believe, that Donnell would recapture his form from a couple of years ago in terms of his receiving skills. That really didn't happen. And I think they also hoped that Will Tye would show more development off of his rookie season. And it kind of flattened out. I think that's a fair comment.
Yeah, it was really up and down in terms of the entire tight end group. They wanted somebody to run with that position. I mean, that was the ultimate goal, so that they didn't necessarily have to play somewhat of a game of musical chairs. And, Brian, appreciate the phone call. Will Tye, he had flashed at the end of the previous year because of Donnell's injury, and you wanted to see maybe if Donnell could bounce back after being plagued by some of those injuries and also clean up some of the fumbles that he had to deal with over the early stages of his career. And then Adams, I think the goal was, if he can make a mark on special teams, Paul, then he could slowly earn more and more playing time. Because remember, here's the other thing. In order to dress, in order to be that third tight end, you have to play special teams.
Yes, you do.
It's not up for debate. So he had to show that what he did at South Carolina, and if you recall, Paul, when we had last year around this time, we spoke to his position coach. His tight ends coach at South Carolina raved about his special teams play.
Yes.
Said that that was one of the things that they never had to ask him to do. He always wanted to do that and so forth. So that was his MO coming in. That wasn't the problem. The problem was, well, I shouldn't say it was a problem, but he would have had to show more consistency in terms of blocking to earn more playing time as an every down tight end. That was the thing.
And let's face it, Will Tye had caught 40-something balls the year before as a rookie. And they were hoping there would be some upside, and he had more experience at the pro level than Adams. Why wouldn't you give him first shot and hope for the best that he would give you what you needed before putting the rookie in? Why wouldn't you do that?
I don't think they were put in a position where they needed to do a baptism by fire compared to some other positions.
They were hoping
at least on paper and during the season. Correct.
The whole season didn't turn out as good as they wanted it to from the tight end spot.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino with you here on Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, 201-939-4513. Andrew is in New Jersey. Andrew, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Andrew Sr. is here today, too, so he has a good free agency question. I'll throw him on after I ask mine.
Very nice.
Like
we got the tag
JPP
team.
At the right price, and are there any other free agents like that can rush the passer, maybe an older guy that could be a part-time not him necessarily, but I mean someone like him. And
there's
is
nobody.
There any word that
no, Andrew.
JPP
look,
he's going to sign.
Save your
else?
Time. Save your time. There are no 4-3 defensive ends who can rush the passer like JPP in free agency. That was the reason the Giants tagged him, because I'm pretty sure that they thought, and this is strictly an educated guess, that they thought if they did not tag him, there would be a couple of Brinks trucks backing up to JPP's front door as soon as free agency opened, and they probably could not deal with the numbers that he would be talking about.
Well, pass rushers are a rare commodity in the National Football League. The elite ones, there's a reason why they never...
Available ones.
Well, I was going to say... There's a reason why they never get to the market because of what they do is so rare, and... Case in point, all you need to do, Paul, is also look at this year's market. It wasn't just JPP. Chandler Jones was given the franchise tag from the Arizona Cardinals. Melvin Ingram from the San Diego Chargers. And I understand some of them are not 3-4 guys and 4-3. I get that. But the point is, they all have the trait of getting to the quarterback. And I'll take it a step further. K'Juan Short of the Carolina Panthers,
right,
who gets to the quarterback even though he's a defensive tackle, was also given the franchise tag by the Carolina Panthers. So when everybody's looking at, is he this guy worth the money, is he not, just look at the landscape of the league. If you let that guy go, you're not finding his replacement overnight. It just doesn't happen.
Right, and we need two to make a Super Bowl run, because you see with only one, Vereen, they double-teamed him. And they played very well without JPP, but against Rodgers, it's just like a house of cards. You really need the second guy. You know, when you have one, you can't really advance far in the playoffs.
And you know what, Andrew? That's why when the Giants were doing those Super Bowl deals under Tom Coughlin, and you saw OC and Michael and Tuck, and then JPP got in the mix, and Kiwi was in the mix. Do you realize truly how blessed the Giants were over that period of time to have not only two terrific pass-rushing defensive ends, but usually three and sometimes four? I mean, do you understand how rare that is?
And they were good against the run, too. So that was probably historically one of the best pass-rushing lines ever. And my next guy, Brandon Marshall, I like because it's alluring, I would think, to him to go on a team that has a shot at a championship. And even though Beckham's the number one guy, that's like a blessing for Marshall because they'll double-team Beckham, so it'll give him a lot of opportunities where he can get a lot of catches, maybe not the spectacular big plays like Beckham. So those are two guys I'm really high on. And you can comment on Marshall, but let me throw Andrew Sr. on, and he'll tell you his guy.
Sounds good. All right, we're getting
the
second part of the tag team. Yes.
Hello.
How we doing, Andrew Sr.?
Hi. The Jets cut Mangold.
Yes.
He was an excellent center, an all-pro. He probably has a year or two left in him yet. Why don't they try to pick him up? Move the guy we got now at center to guard. Then we've got a good three in the middle combination.
I would be very surprised. I would be very surprised if Nick Mangold has 16 games left in him in the 2017 season. He has been badly beaten up over the years. He's a Jet through and through. If the Jets really thought that he could give them another year, they might have tried to renegotiate his deal and give him a pay cut and see if they could keep him around. But I don't think they believe that he could medically get through a 16-game schedule. I think that's your answer.
And how many different centers do you want Eli Manning to work with?
Well, the other thing is Richburg is the guy.
That's the guy they're grooming to be the center. Yeah.
The thing that got me when they played the Minnesota Vikings, and the guy that used to be a defensive tackle for the Giants that plays for
Linville
the Vikings,
Joseph.
He killed our center.
Well, Linville Joseph is a Pro Bowl player, though. He's really, let's not kid ourselves. Linville Joseph is as good as they come.
He's like 300 pounds. He's just too light for the position.
Well, there are some matchups that will give Richburg problems. I'm not going to dispute that. But, you know, he doesn't have to be the best center in the league to still be good enough for you to win with.
Right.
That's okay.
Okay.
You know, everybody's got that one matchup or two that they just don't do well with. It's all right.
That was my thinking.
I understand.
Thank you.
No problem.
Appreciate it.
Regarding the Brandon Marshall call, this is a guy who I'm going to pick a number out of the air here because you could prove me wrong with the stats. He usually gets like 120-something targets a season. If he comes to the Giants, I don't think he's getting anywhere near that many targets. Is that going to be a problem for him?
Oh, and also I would throw in the fact that he does TV work on his off day. Is that going to be a problem if he continues the Showtime show? I mean, that's something that you need to consider in terms of the Giants' schedule and whether that meets the needs of the wide receiver and whether they can find the common ground. And I'll throw out a third factor, which is completely unrelated to Brandon Marshall. If you've noticed over the last few days, Paul, the receiving core has become deeper and deeper. For example, Torrey Smith was just let go by the San Francisco 49ers. That's a tall receiver that can be a vertical threat to be a complement to Shepard and Beckham. And there's plenty of other names. There's a Pierre Garçon out there. DeSean Jackson's going to be out there. Now, some of them are going to be extremely costly.
They're not the tall variety.
Correct. They're not the tall. Jackson's a smaller guy. But the point is, there's a lot of substance that I see on paper with veteran wide receivers that are going to be out there, where I don't know if you necessarily have to say the first name that comes about, you got to make a splash for that.
I'll tell you what, there are a bunch of wide receivers and tall ones in this draft, too.
Of course.
So there's no panic, as far as I'm concerned, to go out and grab a receiver right away.
Let's head back to the phone lines here on Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We've got Nick in the Meadowlands. Nick, what's happening?
What's up, guys?
How are you, Nick?
Speaking of wide receiver, I got a few questions on different positions and a point. But speaking of wide receiver, what do you think of these guys? Robert Davis, Bug Howard, and Cooper Kupp, and another guy, Malone, who's big.
It's funny you mentioned Kupp because I'm a big fan of Kupp.
Yeah, he catches well.
He catches extremely well. Reminds me a lot of Ed McCaffrey.
I was just going to talk about that.
Joe Giravicius, remember him too?
Yes.
Similar kind of guys, you know, not burning speed, but get open, tough matchup problem because of their length, terrific polygrip kind of hands. Remember old polygrip John Missler, by the way? I just threw that one out there for you old timers. and I, you know, he's smart, ran in a pro-style offense. Kupp is a guy who, you know, I've been looking at for a while because, you know, I do FCS football in my spare time on Saturdays, and so I'm very much aware of him and like him. I know that he did well at the combine, and I don't know what
Except
round
for the 40.
The 40
wasn't as fast as you would like.
But you knew that. You knew the 40 wasn't going to burn. But he
and
does.
Jerry Rice he ran a 4.7. So hey.
Exactly. Cooper Kupp is going to do some good things in this league. He is. I know he is, and I wouldn't mind seeing him here.
What round?
That's a good question, and that's the problem. That's the problem. What round does he go? I don't know that I'd be. I don't think I'd be going even second round on him. I try to get him lower than that. But then again, you know what my problem is? Here's my biggest problem. I'm looking at trying to get a tight end, like a Butter or Kittle in the third or fourth round. I'm looking to get the power back like P. Ryan in the third or the fourth round. You know?
You think he's dropping?
I'd like to get P. Ryan in the third round, but a lot of people in Indianapolis thought he was shooting up the board, and you may have to get him in the second. I had even had a personnel guy tell me 2 weeks ago, you're not getting him out of the second round.
Yep.
And I, you know, and so my big, it's funny, my consternation, here, this Lance, you're going to love this. My stomach is turning over who the second, third, and fourth round picks are going to be. The number one pick doesn't worry me at all. They're going to get a blue chip guy at one of the positions they could use, whether it's a tight end, whether it's a defensive lineman, whether it's a linebacker. They're going to get a stud at number 23 who's going to help them right away. I'm convinced of that. I almost don't care who number 23 is. I'm more worried about rounds 2, 3, and 4. I mean that. Anyway.
I'm on board with you. Speaking of Ed McCaffrey, he's got to be a proud dad, man. That kid is good.
Yeah, he is good.
He's going to make a team look good if they know how to utilize him.
Very versatile player, yeah. He's going to have to go to a wide-open attack, though.
I like what I saw. He looks really good.
Yeah.
Now, at defensive tackle, a couple guys, Malik McDowell, he's got speed, and he's huge. You can use him inside and outside, you know, in that, you know, wherever you want to put him. And another guy, Larry Ogunjobi, fast guy.
There are probably three rounds of defensive linemen who are going to be able to play in this league almost right away, especially if you're going with a rotation. So, you know, and if the Giants are able, in fact, to keep three-fourths of their starting front four intact, which we think they're going to be able to do, even if Hankins gets away, think about it. That prospect who comes in, who's a top three round pick at defensive tackle, he's going to have a bunch of really good guys playing next to him. It's not like he's going to have to go in there with deer in headlights kind of, oh, my goodness, this is going to be too much for me. He's going to be in there with three other D linemen who can really play the game.
And when you play next to a guy like Damon Snacks Harrison, it doesn't hurt.
It does not.
To learn from him as a rookie, if that's the case. But there's going to be opportunities for them to build up their depth at the defensive line position, not just defensive tackle, defensive end as well. I mean, I think there's going to be plenty of substantive guys that you could grab in the third and the fourth rounds and can come in day one and certainly contribute.
It's like what I said to one of the draft guys we had on at the Combine, and I hope you got a chance to watch our Combine shows. I had said to one of the guys, for me, like in rounds 2, 3, 4, there's like 5 rounds worth of players that you could pack into those 3 rounds. And that's what makes this draft so incredibly difficult for me. And he was like, I know what you're talking about. Because they're all guys who have a make-it grade, who should be good, solid players. They may not be Pro Bowl players, but they're going to be good, solid players on winning teams. And you can't get enough of those guys. That's how you build a contender.
Absolutely.
If Cleveland was smart, they could build, like, most of their team if they were smart, you know.
But remember, Nick, the Browns also had a boatload of picks last year, too, if you recall.
I know.
Because they
that's
made a number
I'm
of trades.
If they knew how to use
Well, them. I mean, listen, volume with draft picks is great. It's all about what you do with the draft picks. I mean, everybody says go out and get stockpiles of draft picks. You can say that about any team.
Yes.
But it's all about what
like
you do
Jimmy
with
Johnson.
It.
You got to be like Jimmy Johnson. You got to know.
Yeah.
Who is on the board and who you want? And,
no doubt,
exactly.
And you got to really do your homework. Now, Paul, with corner, what would you rather have if we pick a corner? Would you rather take a guy that's just a slot guy? Or would you rather get like a clone for DRC, a guy that's a big, tall guy like DRC? Because I got some guys that I'm looking at that are smaller. Moreau, really good. Latimer, Myrick, and Griffin. And then taller guys, you got Witherspoon, King, and Tankersley that are on the 6'2" plus side, you know.
You know,
what would you rather have?
I would think, to be honest with you, I'd rather go for a slot cover corner. Because in my mind, Apple and Jenkins are going to be here for several years to come. DRC, given his age and his contract situation, you don't think he'll be here as long as those other two guys. And I think that Apple and Jenkins have proven, although they were tried all around last summer, they're best on the outside. I don't think you want either one of those guys coming into the slot. So if you wanted to go out now and draft a slot cover corner somewhere in this draft, I'd have no problem with that. And he could learn under DRC for a season.
And there's also an interesting free agent that just became available. Buffalo let go of Mikel Roby-Coleman, who was their slot corner. So he's going to be out there on the market, and that was a surprise because I don't think many people, at least I didn't think Buffalo was going to let him go. He'd be somebody that I'd consider in free agency.
I had just seen Gilmore let go from their secondary this morning, though.
Well, but I'm talking about yesterday. The Bills cut five players.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
Yeah, they cut five players. They Dan Carpenter, but one of the other guys was Mikel Roby-Coleman, and he was their slot corner.
Didn't see that last year.
So that's somebody that I think is going to receive plenty of interest from multiple teams who are looking to bring in some veteran presence there.
But you know what? I think you draft one because it's a prospect for the future, and you don't want to be paying veteran
free
agent
money for
those
guys. But as you know,
now,
the slot is no joke for a rookie to be thrown into. There's a reason why
the
Giants moved DRC.
Yeah,
there.
But he wouldn't have to be. You draft one this
year. Oh, of course, because you have your starters. No, I get that. But I'm
just
saying that if you're looking at it from another team's perspective, and they're saying to themselves they want to just draft the slot corner,
it's
not easy to make that transition in year one.
Nick,
Fabian Moreau and then Jalen Myrick, he's 5'10", 200. He's faster than DRC in his 40 time, 4.28.
All right, Nick, we got to go because we want to get to a few more callers, but appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. How about Chris in Virginia Beach? Chris, what's happening?
Hey, fellas. Lance, Paulie D.
Hi.
Couple things, man. I don't really care for these corners, 6'2", 6'3". I'm thinking back to Seahorn and who was very good. We'll never dispute that, but that Super Bowl, man, in 2000, it was Seahorn, and what was the other guy? Came over from Jacksonville.
Dave Thomas.
They have a problem, I think, flipping their hips. And with these smallish, quick, receivers these days, I don't think big corners are the way to go. I was just kind of piggybacking off of the last caller. To my point, I think a lot of the fans, man, are under or devaluing what JPP really brings to the table, you know what I'm saying? And like he doesn't grow on trees. You know, he's a rare species. You know what I'm saying? With that size, that speed, that power.
Yep.
To play the run as well as he does it, and also to pass rush as well as he does it, and to get back after the injury and all of that. I mean, I really don't know if he's coming back or not. I'd love to have him, of course, but I don't know if the money makes sense at this point. And another thing I've been hearing is, I hear a lot of talk about, we're going too hard with the safeties over the last 3 or 4 or 5 years. But particularly in Spags' defense, I think we need to understand that the safety position is very important. And really, you can't have enough.
Huge.
You know what I'm saying? So, I just think we got them in house. which is why I'm glad we didn't really, you know, go after anybody over the last couple of years, because we got some guys that I think can play. You know, the injury bug, it is what it is. You know, it's kind of roll the dice. You never know what's going
to
happen.
Chris, you know, here's the one thing that I want you to take into account as you look at JPP or the safeties or anybody else on this defense. The Giants went from 32nd in defense 2 years ago to top 10 defense this past season.
And amazing.
And a defense that, to be honest with you, was capable, in my opinion, was capable of contending for a conference championship. Okay?
I agree.
And when you have that, combined with a quarterback whose window may only be 2 or 3 years, you just don't know, but realistically, it's 2 or 3 years, it has to have an impact on your player acquisitions, because you say to yourself, well, it took a lot to build this defense. Let's face it. It took them some years and it took them some bucks to finally get this defense to where now it's got a chance to do something. I think they're young enough on defense with a couple of tweaks. We know that, you know, they still have a couple of things they need to do here, a little bit, little tweaks, that this could be a defense for the next 2 years, at least, during Eli's window, to be a contender.
Absolutely.
So if you think that, then you kind of have to do whatever you can to keep JPP around, to be honest.
I agree. I think it's win now, because we got Eli now. We got to win now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
You know what I'm saying?
And that's why, you know, I understand that the $17 million on the 1 year franchise tag is high and it does kind of handcuff them in free agency. But in retrospect, I don't blame the Giants for doing it, because I really think if he had walked out the door, he was going to get run over by 3 Brinks trucks by some other team and they were going to steal him away.
They were going after him last year, you know? And
the Cardinals
I think
did.
He chose to come back, actually.
Yes.
I think the Cardinals went after him real hard last year. And I think he showed a little, you know, a little loyalty in coming back, you know, after the injury. So I agree with you 100%. The time is now, you know.
Yep, it sure is.
Last point, guys, and I know you gotta run. I'm looking at, you know, the mock drafts. Really, I really don't put a lot of stock in them. They don't make a lot of sense. But I keep seeing consistently Deshaun Watson dropping. I'll take this off the air. If he's there at 23.
No.
I don't think he will be. But if he is.
No, it's not about him being there at 23. I'll answer it. It's about, if you're saying the window is now to win, Chris, which is what you and Paul just went back and forth about, then how is a quarterback that is going to back up Eli Manning helping you win right now? Explain that
to me. That's my question. Would we just say, okay, hey, you know what? We got a stud right here. Are we listening to trade offers?
I think you're always listening to trade
right now.
By all means, you want to ring that phone for me? If he's on the board at 23 and somebody wants to ring my phone, I'm picking it up and listening. Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So I love when I'm on the same page with you guys, because I respect you guys a lot, man. Y'all take it easy. Have a good afternoon.
All right, Chris, you as well. Appreciate the phone call. Let's head to Joe in Pennsylvania. Joe, what's happening?
Hey, great to talk to you guys.
Hey, Joe.
So you're Jerry Reese there. How many calls did you make already, and who did you make them to?
Joe, those phone calls are going on outside of this room.
Yes.
We are sequestered in this studio with a closed door, a camera, and a couple of microphones. That means we have no idea what Jerry's doing on his telephone. No wiretappings going on in this room.
I hope he made a call to Cincinnati's tackle and maybe Cleveland's wide receiver. You know what I mean? I only think we have to get our offense going, and you know, I think we will be there, because I think the rest is in the draft that we can pick up the way it's looking.
Oh, wait, my phone. Wait. Jumbo Elliott wants to come back? You willing to have Jumbo coming back?
Leave it to you for all the old school references.
Hey, I'm just trying to have some fun.
Which I'm not surprised about.
Okay,
no,
Joe.
No, that's all I'm saying. Like, I hope he did call, you know what I mean, make a pinch at, I think, an offense on these veteran tackles or so, if they want to come or not, to put out a few bucks for them. If not, I think like a good tall wide receiver, if Eli has to get rid of the ball quick, you know, that can use their body and their height. And,
sure.
Yeah.
You know,
well, there's a number of veterans out there that fit that criteria, Joe. I mean, it's not as if there's just one option out there, and it's not as if you have to go after, I mean, you alluded to Terrell Pryor. That's who you were alluding to, the Cleveland Browns wide receiver. But remember, he's much younger, and he's going to command a lot of money. So
well,
he's not the only guy out there.
I understand that, but if you can't put your money on somebody that's worth it, that's where we have to upgrade our offense. You know, if you can't get it in the offensive line, then that's really what I would do or so, unless it's somebody else big on defense that's going to help you.
But, Joe, I'll give you an example. Anquan Boldin, who's been a free agent for the last few seasons, you know, last year he signed with the Lions, and I thought he made a very positive impact. And he was a bargain guy. So my point is, you don't have to always throw the money at the name that maybe everybody knows when you could get a quality veteran who wants to come to a team, has a good role, can win. There's bargain deals out there. That's my point.
I agree. And I said, I look at the Giants, and like I said, anything less than 10 wins this year would be, you know what I mean, a failure, really, and not making a playoff.
It would be a downer. I don't want to use the word failure. It would be a downer because, you know, obviously after 11 wins, the expectations are higher.
To build upon that. Absolutely. But on the flip side, and I'm not saying it's going to happen, there's been a lot of parity in this division. Which has been well documented. We've seen teams go crazy one year, and then all of a sudden the complete opposite the following year. It's happened.
And I'm not going to build in an excuse for you, Joe, but the Giants have four West Coast trips this year. And don't kid yourself, that does take a toll on a team. It does impact the team. And the scheduling of those games, in my mind, and where the bye week falls, is going to definitely be a factor on what the Giants do this season.
And remember, they had a three-game homestand this season. It's very unlikely that that happens in back-to-back years.
And that was a good thing for them.
Correct. Because it happened also right after the London trip. Mm-hmm. You had the bye.
It
played out very nicely.
Very nicely.
And notice how momentum coincided with
that,
too.
Yes, no question.
You have to take that into consideration.
Thank you, Joe.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
You got it, Joe. Appreciate the phone call. All right, we go to Mike in Florida as we continue to run through these calls. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, guys, we have a bunch of guys that get together, different people all the time, snowbirds coming down. A couple of guys from the D.C. Baltimore area today. Probably just a wild rumor, but they're saying that they think that the Redskins and the Cleveland team, the Browns, may do a trade with Cousins and that going to Cleveland. And that would allow the Redskins to get a top pick, which they feel would probably be the defensive lineman from Alabama. And that would help the Redskins shut down or help slow down the Dallas attack. And they feel that they can beat the Giants with a couple of Redskins can beat the Giants with a couple of other additions because they'll also have some top picks. Don't know if there's any truth to that. They were very, very adamant in that this might be a good thing. Now, I read some other articles that said the Redskins are in disarray in their front office with their general manager probably having personal problems. So I don't know where these guys are getting this stuff.
Well,
what was in their
first thing
this
you
morning.
Do when you get wind of a rumor, you go to Twitter and see how much, how many trees are burning with that rumor.
And that clearly provides a lot of validity, by the way.
it doesn't, but at least it gives you an idea what people are talking about. And I don't see that one anywhere here. But here's what I will tell you, okay? If I'm the Redskins, I'm trying to keep Kirk Cousins. I mean, honestly. What are you going to do? You going to put McCoy in behind center?
They don't have an answer to replace Kirk Cousins. So, I mean, it really doesn't make much sense to trade him unless you find option B. And, Mike, I can tell you the only substantive rumors connected to Kirk Cousins has been tied to the San Francisco 49ers, and the reason being is Kyle Shanahan, who's now their new head coach, was the Redskins' offensive coordinator. He used to be, or he was in Cleveland for about a cup of coffee, and then he left. If he was still there, I think there's a lot more to what you're saying or what your friends down in Florida are discussing, but if there's any rumors that I think there's some substance behind, it's San Francisco acquiring him, not Cleveland.
Oh, well, they just felt that the Redskins wanted to move up and get that defensive lineman. And I think the Redskins are about 3 to 5 positions higher than the Giants in the draft. I don't know what the Redskins' position is, whether or not they're 10, 12, 15, or 18, but they felt that would give the Redskins really good draft potential.
Well, you know, to be honest with you, I think one of the keys right now, if you're looking at this division, is you want to see not just where the guys are picking, but how many picks these teams have. The Giants, fortunately, will have all 7 of their picks in this draft, even though they had to drop down in that one round because of the walkie-talkie thing. That's important, and this is one of the reasons why when people are so quick to ask Jerry Reese to move and to trade picks, he's not so quick to do it. You know, he does value them. He is going to make deals when he wants to, but for the most part, he'd like to hold on to all of his picks every year.
Redskins are 17th, by the way. So you're right, Mike. They're just right in front of the Giants.
Well,
yeah,
6.
A few spots, but, you know, not that far.
So, I don't know. They were really excited about the whole thing. They were typical Washington Redskin rooter. They have zero respect for the Giants. I guess the Giants and Dallas are probably the two teams that they hate the most, and they don't like the Eagles as well.
How much tarnish is on their last Super Bowl trophy?
It's probably really, really dusty.
Just ask them about that the next time, okay?
Yep. Will do. That's all. I just pass that on to you guys and let you know what kind of scuttlebutt is going out there. These are all a bunch of oldsters like myself.
Okay.
Just thought I'd pass it in.
All right, Mike.
By the way, I enjoyed your show. I only caught a few of your shows from the Combine. You did a great job, guys.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate you tuning in, Mike. All right. A lot of rumors out there, I can tell you that. That's just the beginning of the Rumorville, now that free agency is well underway.
You and Schmelk tomorrow on a big free agent show.
Correct.
Big free agent show. Now, you think you got enough rumors today?
I'm sure there's going to be tons.
Tomorrow?
Well, and there are some deals that could be reported even starting today and tomorrow, especially if players decide to re-up with their respective teams. We may start to hear some of that, so the free agent market could become smaller as you move towards Thursday, March 9th, 4 p.m. Eastern. That is when the new league year officially begins. Deals can be officially announced. Trades can take place and so forth. But for the time being, you have these 2 days or so where there's just a lot of chatter and a lot of potential talks on the wheeling and dealing front. With that being said, certainly appreciate everybody tuning in for Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live.
And by the way, I am not exploring free agency. To those of you who do not like my old school views, I'm sorry.
I mean, would you even consider putting on another color uniform? That's my million-dollar question.
You know, hometown discount.
Hometown discount. You'd work for nothing, my assumption would be. They could just give you another polo, and you'd be like, I'm here for the next century, if it was up to you. Boy, that was some bombshell at the end of the program. We will speak to you tomorrow for another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. As you know, Paul Dottino is not on the move. I could have told you that.
I'll be back
Thursday.
I could have
told you that tomorrow, yes. With that being said, for Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday right here on Giants.com.